We didn't take a broad enough view of our responsibility, and that was a big mistake. And it was my mistake, and I'm sorry.
I'm Steve Stein, and this is Inside Asia. That was the voice of Mark Zuckerberg, CEO of Facebook, who appeared before the Senate to say how sorry he was for just about everything. Let's face it, Facebook has had a challenging time lately, and before that it was Twitter, which as it turns out proved pretty effective for Russian trolls looking to skew an election. These are the times we live in, some say, but maybe not. Amidst all the social media backlash, it's notable that LinkedIn, the de facto social media platform for professionals, seems to have somehow risen above the fray. To find out why this might be and to better understand LinkedIn's business model, I sat down with Olivier Legrand, LinkedIn's Managing Director and Vice President for Asia Pacific and China. The company got its start in the US, but soon grew worldwide to become the largest single network of professionals, job seekers, and key influencers. I started off by asking Olivier about some of the nuances involved in operating the company in Asia.
The big nuance and the big difference is really the opportunity you have to operate in hypergrowth and in fast growth market and what comes with this. The excitement that comes with this as well as the complexity that comes with this. So a real need for prioritization and knowing where you are going. And really the complexity of the makeup of the region.
Right. Many languages, many operating requirements.
Exactly. Many languages, many cultures, many ways of consuming content, news, networking, leveraging relationships. Mm. All of those cultures are potentially massively different, are living on a pretty wide spectrum of maturity and cultural practices, which makes the region, for me, highly complex, but so amazing because I've been doing this for 14 years now and I don't feel that I'm an expert at anything. I feel I'm learning every single day. The continuous opportunity to learn, spending a week in Australia, which is a very mature market, the highest amount of advertising per capita in the world, was a very dense and mature agency ecosystem, for example. And then the following week being in India, where we were building a business from scratch with an amazing opportunity to connect very young professionals, fresh out of schools that are looking for their first job. And so a totally different audience in a very different, ad market ecosystem or, in terms of recruitment as well. And so the variation that you get into working there and the opportunity when you are with your team on the ground, when you meet those customers to learn is just infinite. And that's where my energy comes from. That's why I love the job that I do. Yeah. I travel too much, spend too much time in planes like a lot of people that have regional roles in Asia, but I get my energy from our customers, our members, my team on the ground, and how much learning I'm getting from all of that.
So many people know LinkedIn as a professional network of online professionals who are looking to kind of identify, present their CVs, present their credentials, and also to identify job opportunities. Is that largely how you would characterize it? Because I think it's much more, is it not?
It's all of that. I mean, there are a set of value proposition that our members can extract from the platform. The first one is network and the value of network. And I feel that in Asia where relationships are so powerful, where can you actually build in a very thoughtful and in the cloud your network? Stay connected with those relationships, understand how they evolve in their career, how they move from company A to company B, how they get promoted. And so really putting your network on steroids, like giving you a real tool that allow you to leverage that set of relationships, professional relationships in a very unique way.
Is that almost a natural extension of the way that Asia operates because it's so relationship driven? Or is there a resistance because putting your credentials out there also is a bit not in alignment with the way the Asian executive thinks?
Yeah, going back to how the region is living on a large spectrum, it's all over the map. I mean, if you look at markets like India, Australia, Singapore, we have some of the highest level of penetration of our platform of professionals. In Australia, we pretty much have 95 to over 100% in some categories of professionals being on the platform. and some of the highly engaged members of the platform. And then you go to the absolute other end of the spectrum in Japan, where there is indeed much more consciousness around how you present yourself, a different way of thinking about your careers, how many years, and the fact that you're entering a relationship with a company for life, at least in your mind when you get started.
Well, and that's part of it. People don't want to present themselves as, I'm looking for a job, I'm putting my credentials out there, and therefore, otherwise, it might send the wrong signal to your corporate leader.
Yes, and this is where, you know, there's an opportunity to really bust the myth here in terms of what LinkedIn is. 70 to 80% of what people do on LinkedIn has nothing to do with looking for a job.
What do they do?
They're leveraging their network, and they are gathering professional information to be great at their job.
By connecting with people, or by looking at your news feeds and reading articles or reports or downloading information you're providing? What?
All the above. Yeah. How do you be successful into your job? By knowing how to leverage the right relationship, by knowing where to find the right partnerships. How do you get relevant into your exco meeting in the morning, or your morning meeting with your team? By knowing what's happening in your industry, by knowing what people in your network and in your industry are actually reading, commenting, liking. And so the relevancy of the content and the unique access to professional content, professional expertise, and to network is what makes you primarily successful at your job.
Well, let's talk about content. In these days of fake news and questionable feeds, what does LinkedIn do to basically procure or curate the appropriate type of information? Or do you leave it to your users?
We leave it to the context of the platform. At the end of the day, the users are in power. What's really powerful on LinkedIn is you come here to represent your professional self. And you are basically commenting, liking, sharing content with the purpose of creating value for the network. And you're very conscious about you bringing the wrong topic in the wrong context on the platform is going to be disturbing a set of relationships that matters a lot to you, being your colleagues, your boss, your customers, your potential customers. And so what happens on LinkedIn, and you haven't seen us much in the news around the fake news. You know, we're not really the place where these things happen.
Why not?
Because of that. Because when people come to the platform, they know that what they're going to say and what they're going to be doing will reflect on their professional identity. And they are very conscious about that.
Well, just to be a little bit, I'm not saying it just is what it is, so it's not really a criticism, but, you know, what I see in the feed is, you know, just had a great lunch with my team in Japan, looking forward to my flight at 5. I mean, it's almost like the Facebook equivalent of you know, cute kittens, right? You've got this feeling of, like, people want to...
It's less cute than kittens. There is some of that happening on the platform. There's also, you know, amazingly valuable input and articles that are being shared by people in your industry that are telling you should know about this around net neutrality, or this is what's happening in cloud computing. Where do you have those conversations? What are the places, what are other places where you find that level of expertise and that level of, I would say, qualified sharing of business stories? And then you have a whole set of, beyond, you know, professional content in that form, of leadership advice. You've got great leaders that are leveraging the platform to share their, how they manage difficult conversations, how they've overcome a challenging situation with their team. And so that creates really a very unique, due to the context of the platform, set of content that are highly relevant professionally.
Well, I would agree. I mean, and part of me is just struggling to filter through some of the other stuff to get to that, because you're absolutely right. There's some wonderful content on there, and this is my community. I chose it, right? When I bring people in, you know, over all these years of creating my LinkedIn network, I want to see feeds that are relevant and important, and I also want to see them more Asia-focused. There seems to be a large weighting, and maybe it's just by virtue of the size of the populations that are on LinkedIn, towards U.S. content or maybe other areas. It's hard to know how to get to what you want to get to faster, you know?
I don't think so, actually, because the reality is your feed is not a makeup that is connected to how big the network is in North America or elsewhere. Actually, we've got 60% of our members that are outside of North America. Mm. And really your feed is made of content that's based on your network and your industry.
Okay.
And so things can be a little bit skewed in your job, particularly because as recruiters and you know, you guys build very extensive networks. Mm. When we talk to professionals, because it's your job, your job is to connect with people and potentially help connect them with opportunities. And so there's a much more aggressive stance in terms of connecting with a large number of people. Our recommendation is to build the right network,
right,
to connect with the relevant people. Yeah. Because in many, many ways, we are a, you know, big data, machine learning, artificial intelligence company that is using a data set that we get from you through your input, your network, the information you give through your profile, and are building a feed that's going to be relevant for you. And so as you build that network, my recommendation has always been in to really be thoughtful about the people you connect to. It's not about the number, it's about the quality. And if you get the quality, the right people, from the right geographies, from the right industries, your feed will reflect that.
Yeah.
Fair enough, fair point. Are you, or is LinkedIn in the process of rethinking aspects of his business model, given what's going on right now with the idea of selling user data or user information?
We're not, because we are a members first company. And there's one thing that this company understood from the very, very beginning is that we literally are a consumer web platform with businesses sitting on top of it. If we lose the trust of our members, we lose everything.
Yeah, I agree. All right.
And so it's so foundational, and you know, we have a set of culture and values that we're feeling very proud of and that we're sharing. And we've qualified very, very clearly for employees, especially as we're growing as an organization. And the number one of those is members first.
Right.
And so this is an organization where you could come and give us all the money in the world. We would not give you what you want, because we know what you have a lot more to lose. And so our customers have been actually very easy and very understanding of that. There is every now and then someone that comes and tells us, if you were able to give us access to this, we would be able to pay a lot of money. And we're like, well, if we were doing this, we would lose the trust of our membership.
Yeah.
And by doing so, you and us would lose everything.
This is Steve Stein, and my guest is Olivier Legrand, LinkedIn's Managing Director and Vice President for Asia Pacific and China. Back in a second. This is Inside Asia. I'm speaking with Olivier Legrand, LinkedIn's Managing Director and Vice President for Asia Pacific and China. Full disclosure, for the last decade or so, I've worked as a headhunter in the executive search industry. It's a job that connects people and companies in the same way as, well, LinkedIn connects people and companies. Not to put too fine a point on it, but I sometimes have a complicated relationship with that idea. The podcast often tells stories of digital disruption, and here, at least potentially, is another one. In the second part of our discussion, I turn our conversation specifically towards the executive search industry and the future of work. What does LinkedIn have to tell us about the skills gap? What does LinkedIn look like amidst a gig economy?
My perspective on this, and considering we're doing a massive amount of business with search firms, is what we've done has been pushing firms like yours to really think through where their real value is. Mm. And if your real value is just in the database you have and your matchmaking, you're going to be in trouble. But if your relationship goes a lot deeper in terms of thinking about challenge strategy, human capital management, what we've seen with search firms is the good ones are doing very, very well. And LinkedIn's been here now for 15 years. And none of them have disappeared. If anything, they've continued to grow leaps and bounds, and they've used our platform as a way for them to grow in order to commoditize even for themselves a part of their job, which is probably not where the most value is, and being able to focus themselves in the relationship with their customers in places that create even further value. And so I think of, you know, with all the respect I have with the search business, I think it's a low barrier to entry business, and a lot of people thought they would just get in there and match a few jobs a year on big salaries and leave out of it. And I think these guys are using us as well, but probably a little bit more threatened by us. I think firms that are established like yours and like many, many of the mid-sized to large-sized search firms They very quickly understood that LinkedIn was going to be an asset and a tool, and that would give them the bandwidth to think about the other ways they would bring further value to their customers.
Well, it's interesting because if you look at kind of the revenue drivers for the big search firms, increasingly it's moving more towards assessment, leadership advisory, compensation analysis, other types of value-added services, maybe more in the category of consulting, or management consulting versus, executive search. And that's an indication right there that maybe basically they're probably having the traditional business eaten away at by more technical solutions like LinkedIn.
I think they do the whole thing. You know, they're still helping finding the right candidates and doing the matching. They're using LinkedIn in order to do that. But they're layering a whole set of additional services that you've mentioned just right now and more to make their value and their value proposition even stickier, even more valuable to their customers. And you know, like I said, those businesses have been growing a lot. So it doesn't feel like a zero-sum game to me. If I look at our business over the past, 9 to 10 years, our talent solutions business has grown tremendously. And at the same time, those search firms, and a lot of them, have grown tremendously as well. And so it feels like the pie has grown. And we've all benefited from it.
If anything, have you considered as an organization building a professional services layer on top of what you do? I mean, you're the guys with the tools. You've got all the power at your fingertips. You know how to leverage, the maximum search capability and the functionality of LinkedIn. Why not get into the business yourself? Do you think that you could do a better job or at least, kind of rival, if not push out some of the old guard?
No, we think we'll have a bigger impact as being a technology company and developing and spending that energy that we would spend to servicing our own tool and continuing to build an incredible consumer web platform. You know, we went from 0 to 546 million members over the course of the past 15 years. I think for us to grow that community to 600, 700 and potentially a billion people over time is more important and more valuable, and build scalable services and scalable technologies on top of it. You know, we have, as a company, Talent Solutions is an amazing business, but it's roughly 60% of our revenue. We have three other businesses that we're involved in too that I mentioned earlier. We have an advertising business, we have a social selling, modern selling business, and we have an e-learning business. And we feel that in every of those businesses, what we bring is the uniqueness of the insights that can be extracted from our data to help companies be smarter in the way they hire, smarter in the way they market, smarter in the way they sell, and smarter in the way they learn. Mm. And so fundamentally, our DNA as a tech company is more to gravitate toward that type of scalable technology-based SaaS businesses than to get ourselves into building a service business.
So it feels like the conversation on robotics. Are robots going to replace us, or are robots going to simply allow us to work more effectively? It sounds like it's the latter. You know, LinkedIn and the recruitment world are going to provide the tools, the platform, the capabilities to help search consultants and recruiters do a better job of finding the right people and holding on to them.
So I think on this notion of fourth industrial revolution, it's a topic that we care a lot about at LinkedIn, and we think it's very important. To your point, there's very dystopian views that we're all going to lose our job and we're going to need to get a form of, of income that's going to come from somewhere else. And there's people that are saying, no, nothing is going to happen and it's all going to be fine. It's going to self-regulate. We think truth is somewhere in the middle. There is something real that's happening. There's definitely going to be jobs that are going to be disappearing. There's definitely a portion of everybody's job, maybe 20, maybe 30%, that one will not have to do anymore because a bot, a machine will be able to do it. That poses a number of questions. One, for the people that get 20, 30% extra time, what are they going to do with this time? And how do we reskill our skill, upskill ourselves in order to be able to continue to add value? And for the jobs that are going to disappear, how do we reskill at scale some of those individuals? And we feel as a company that we can be a part of the solution, not the only solution for sure, but be a part of the solution through our data set and through our ability to understand and get a view on what are the skills of the future. So think about skills matching and course matching. Mm. So hence the e-learning acquisition we did about 2 years ago when we acquired Lynda, because we felt that as skills deprecate faster and faster, new technology, new tools are coming in. As professionals, we will all have, and our kids will have, to continue learning and to embrace permanent learning and constant learning in the course of their career. Now, once you've said that, the question is what to learn? And I think most professionals, if not all professionals, are very open to learning new things. They're just often presented with 10,000 courses and they just don't know where to start.
Yeah, it's overwhelming. And I think you raise a really interesting point. It's not so much what you've done in the past, but what you could do in the future with the right tools, guidance, instruction, learning capabilities. And I think there's too many organizations that are geared towards providing training and development tools that are actually obsolete.
Yeah, the way we think about it is we want to empower individuals, so our members, to invest in their own training by providing them a platform where, based on the LinkedIn data set, we'll be able to point them at courses and skills that, from our perspective and from the perspective of our machine learning and algorithm, will be relevant to get them to continue to be relevant in their job or potentially get them to the next job. We want to work with enterprises and companies of all size, to be honest, I say enterprises, but also small and medium businesses, to help them invest on behalf of their employees into learning and development tool with that same mindset of really helping them navigate through the complexity of the skills taxonomy and the different skills that they could acquire, and try to help them think about how they can continue to upskill themselves to stay relevant in the jobs they are. And I think ultimately we're also doing a lot of work around the world now with governments, where we are using our data set and what we call our economic graph data to provide governments with data and insights, essentially insights, to try to influence the curriculum, the role of the universities, the role of governments. So you see, you know, MySkills Future, for example, in Singapore is a very good example of government thinking, okay,
To attract certain sets, certain people into the market.
To reskill people at scale.
Okay, right.
I think reskilling and finding the right skills path is going to be a very important thing to make that transition less painful than previous industrial revolution. I mean, you know, people that are saying when we went from, you know, farming to factories, it all went well. Probably not. Like a few people stayed on the side of that road. And I think as you're going through those industrial revolution, the way we're going to go through one, and we are going through one at the moment, the question is, how do you alleviate the pain? How do you help people embark the conversion and the learning path that will help them stay relevant?
There's probably no other government in the region that's more across this issue than Singapore. They put a premium on the idea of retraining, retooling their people and staying ahead as a workforce.
Yeah, Singapore is all over it, but not just Singapore. You know, the Indian government's also very active in the way they think about this, and we work with them. Most governments and most economies in the world, I mean, if you went to Davos this year or the year before, this is 80% of the conversation.
Yeah.
You know, what skills gaps, you know, reskilling path, and
future
how
workforce.
Fast is going to future workforce, future of work, the gig economy, you know, and independent work. What does that mean? How is that going to work? And so we think that our data set and insights is going to be in a position to provide the different parts of the ecosystem that I mentioned, the individual, the company, and the government, to navigate that better,
okay,
to understand a bit better what's coming and how to help people through this.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for your time. Fantastic insights about what's going on with LinkedIn. We wish you every success, and we'll be back in touch.
Thank you. We'll continue to work hard at it.
Thank you. That was my interview with Olivier Legrand, LinkedIn's Managing Director and Vice President for Asia Pacific and China. Listeners will know that I close every show with a parting thought, an Asia Insider's Minute where I try to make sense of what we've just heard. This week, I've got two words for you. Relationships matter. This maybe goes without saying, but maybe it goes better with saying amidst this fragmented landscape of digital disconnection.
Relationships have been important in the past, and they're going to be important in the future, particularly when it comes to doing business in Asia. This is not a new idea. Once upon a time in the distant past, and by this I mean the early 1980s, there was an IBM employee named Gert Hofstede. Gert was born and raised in Holland, though left and eventually met and married a girl from England. Despite being two relatively close cultures, Gert was genuinely amazed at the differences between the two cultures. There was a lot to misinterpret. That insight stayed with him when he found himself working with IBM years later. He was an engineer and so understood the importance of clear and precise communication, and the experience of working globally with IBM convinced him that cultural differences was a kind of interference that often interfered with this. And so, during his spare time while working with IBM, he sent out a questionnaire to some 70 countries where IBM had offices. The result, they call it now cultural dimension theory, is studied today by business schools around the world. There's much to learn from Gert and his findings, and one of those things is that relationships arguably matter more in Asia than they do in the States. Anyone who has done business with teams in Asia know there is a lot that goes unsaid in any negotiation or exchange. You also probably know that you have to take time to get to know people. A lot has changed in the world, but that has not. Generally speaking, it pays to take the time to get to know people in Asia. That's true everywhere, but it's particularly true here. What was powerful about my conversation with Olivier was this. LinkedIn is more than a mechanism for connecting people. There's something more at play. The company prides itself on fomenting those relationships and building trust. For the sake of LinkedIn and its millions of users, I hope this remains the case. Not too long ago, another social media executive said something quite similar. Now he's testifying before the U.S. Congress, explaining and even redefining trust as it exists or should exist between companies and customers. How will this bode for the world of social media? Time will tell. Thanks for listening. Until next time, this is Steve Stein saying, come in from the outside on Inside Asia.